On today's show, we talk about Team USA, which is losing Kawhi Leonard. We vibe check the Miami Heat, who are having another brutal offseason. And we preview the NBA Summer League in Las Vegas. That and more coming up right now on this episode of No Cap Room. Hello, friends. Welcome to No Cap Room, and welcome to episode number 200 of Ball Don't Lie. I was just informed, of course, that is not just us here at No Cap Room. That is the good word, but goodwill. That was many an episode of Divine Intervention, and we have gotten plenty of On the Clock with Kristen Peek, the number one Zach Edey hater. But today, it is No Cap Room with myself, Jake Fisher, senior NBA reporter for Yahoo Sports. And joining me, as always, senior NBA writer for Yahoo Sports, it's my man, it's your man, it's everyone's man, it's Dan Devine. How the hell are you?
I'm doing great, Jake. I am on the mend. I'm DNP muscle relaxers right now. I strained a muscle in my lower back over the weekend. And I got to say, DNP muscle relaxers, not bad. Not currently on them right now, but they make for a nice sleep. The back injury is healing. The shoulder injury is on its way. Nature is healing. And I'm in a better mood than I would have expected heading into this. So, the energy is good. Let's keep it rolling.
Yeah. From like a body maintenance being old standpoint, my story of the week is that my Tuesday pickup run, which I couldn't play in the last couple of weeks because of free agency and draft and everything, I turned down a free ticket offered to me for someone to go see Messi play at Argentina at MetLife to play in my Tuesday pickup run. And I get there, and because it's so fucking humid out in New York this week, the court was so moist that after two games, I stopped playing because I didn't want to risk injury. That's the kind of level of old and responsible that I've now taken my physical activity. So I walked away and I can still walk. So there you go.
That's the important part. I also want to apologize to everybody listening for the word moist appearing on this show. I don't think anybody wanted
moist,
that.
Moist.
I would prefer it if you stopped saying it over and over again. I think that'd be beneficial for our audience, certainly. But I am glad that you made the discretion as the better part of valor decision there. Yeah, you don't want to be playing on a court, wind up with that like Donatas Matheunas, like oil slick across the court, and then Steph runs through, you know, as a whole sprain situation. We need fewer sprains and strains in the podcast contingent. So
sure.
I'm glad that you prioritized your health. Although it would have been cool to catch that soccer game, though, I imagine.
I know. It would have been cool. I mean, especially because, I mean, now we're going totally off the rails, but sorry. Ooh, the wedding.
There's not rails. It's a fucking July podcast. It's fine.
We got a whole rundown. We got five out news. We got USA Canada. We got plenty of things, but we went to this wedding in Short Hills, New Jersey. Well, the hotel was in Short Hills, New Jersey, which right outside the city. And this wedding's the reason, one of the reasons why I was not on the ground at Team USA camp, and Vinny Goodwill graciously, intrepidly braved the Vegas heat and sat down with Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, which were two great long form interviews that got clipped and went pretty viral a bit on Twitter. If you haven't watched or listened to the full versions of that, from Monday's Good Word, I listened to that today, this morning, while I was getting a little lift in, and it was great stuff, so check that out. But while Vinny was doing that, we were in this hotel, and we got told by the bride early that there was some high society person who was going to be there, and there was going to be like insane security at this hotel. So we're like making jokes about who it could be. Couple of our friends were joking that it was me, and I was like, absolutely not, stop joking like that. We wake up, the girls leave to go do their bridesmaid stuff, getting makeup at 9 a.m. We wake up to a text saying that the high security person rhymes with Tylenol bestie. That was the text we got. My first guess was Lionel Richie, because why would Messi be staying?
But bestie and Richie don't rhyme, man.
That was close enough. I don't know. But yeah, Messi was staying at the same hotel that I was at, which made me feel even more like, oh, I should go to this game. So just the signs are, and I went to pick up because ball is life, and didn't happen. Five out. USA, Canada. USA
Hang on, just
wins.
Just making me want to make sure I'm clear. What is five out, Jake Fisher?
Five out is our new opening segment where we tackle five stories from around the NBA, just like USA and Canada squaring off Wednesday night. I forget. Actually, I don't know what arena it was at, but in Las Vegas.
T-Mobile. It was the one that I think I forget the exact number, but it was up near 21,000 people in there. They said it was a new record for watching basketball.
It seemed like
building.
A scene. Like Barry O's on the court. There was one play where Ant.
Are you on a like nickname basis with President Barack Obama? Is that what we're saying now?
He's Barry O when he's in the NBA ecosystem. I think about this all the time because like trying to relate to NBA players and like executives and whatnot, like they're just people at the end of the day too. And for Barack Obama, even though he was the president of the United States, for like 22-year-old Barack Obama to be courtside at USA Canada, and he's the guy that LeBron and KD and Steph are all coming up to dap up, is pretty sick for Barry O. He is Barry O in that environment. He is not former President Barack Obama. He's like hoop head kid from Chicago whose greatest dreams have come to reality. That is why I said Barry O.
Okay, fair enough. Keep moving.
Keep it moving. USA Canada, 86-72. The Americans win. They avenge their gold medal or their bronze medal loss, even though only Tyrese Haliburton and Anthony Edwards were on that team from the World Cup this past summer in Manila when I was there. And I'll just say this from the jump, like obviously exhibition game, they've only been together for like four fucking days, this thing. But I mean, that is going to be the baked in context, excuse, whatever, that these guys all use throughout the entire stretch. You know, we've only been together for a week. We've only been together for 2 weeks because that's what they do instead of doing the three-year commitment that Germany has done and blah, blah, blah. Canada also has some new faces, like Andrew Nembhard was not playing for Canada this past summer. He was bad last night. Great, great player. Couldn't buy a bucket. So I think that's one note about like, can the gap be closed when these teams face each other, when it actually counts in Paris? But the thing that jumped out to me to start the most is that, of course, Steve Kerr being the head coach of the Golden State Warriors, we saw this a bit in the World Cup run, there's going to be some takeover from translation of his style and schemes from the Warriors, which a lot of that has a lot of post stuff, right? It's always the pinch post actions where Draymond's touching it and Looney's touching it and even Wiggins gets down there. And it's just really cool to see that now be Joel Embiid and Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo. Particularly, I mean, Joel fouled out midway through the third quarter, but it's next edition.
I think
so
like
who
12
cares?
Total minutes of work. Yeah. It was a quick hook for him.
He didn't look great, but it just was so striking to see Joel Embiid, all 7 foot, 280 pounds of Joel Embiid in the Draymond Green, Kevon Looney, Andrew Wiggins post, because he can pass out of it for sure, but he can also bulldoze them. I mean, there's going to be plenty of size in, you know, Rudy Gobert, Victor Wembanyama, whatever. But most teams, like the big guy on Germany, for example, Jurgensen is like 6'10", built like a power forward. Like there's not going to be even those two French Eiffel Towers are not going to be able to compete strength to strength, man to man, when Joel has his position and his footwork down and everything. So that was the first thing that jumped off the screen to me.
Yeah. And, you know, two, as you mentioned, it's sort of the first run for Embiid there. You know, I said, you know, five fouls in 12 minutes, didn't even make it to the end of the third quarter. There's the, you know, discussion of like ramping up his conditioning. Like, remember, he had knee surgery midseason. He was dealing with knee surgery and the knee issues and Bell's palsy and God knows what else during the first round series against the Knicks. And it's only been, you know, a couple months since that. So he's still working his way into game shape. His quote was, "It's my first time in FIBA, so I'm going to get used to it. A lot of physicality is allowed, especially for bigs. And it was one of those nights. I'm a quick learner. I'll just need a game or two." So they have some more exhibition games to sort of get his feet wet. Yes, you're right. Like they might not need too much of him on outside of those specific, like France is a specific matchup where you could you really need to play through him, or you might need to play through him. Serbia, certainly with, you know, being with Jokic being there, like that's when you want to have the, you know, the big guys there. So like the getting him up to speed is going to be interesting. You mentioned the other two bigs, Anthony Davis and Bam Adebayo, them playing together in that second unit, I thought was really interesting. And also a continuation of something you had talked about, not so much that big pairing, but something you saw a lot in Manila with the FIBA World Cup team, Kerr kind of going with like line changes in that second unit.
Yeah. I mean, full five-man hockey shifts until Joel fouled out. And then there's a couple one-off substitutions in the fourth quarter. But that was something they pretty much stuck to throughout. And I mean, this group, Tyrese, Anthony Edwards, who's the three? It's Bam, AD. Who was the three?
Tatum.
Like, and Tatum looked like all he wanted to do was prove to the world that he could still get to the rim anytime he wants, as he showed off doing pretty well in game five of the finals. Yeah, that's an Olympic lineup that could start and be the favorite themselves, you know? So,
yeah.
And it was, watching AD and Bam on defense together was a sight to behold. And it also was just kind of funny to me too, being that like, these are the two guys in both ends of the conferences where they, you know, they met in the 2020 finals, correct? Right? Yeah.
Yep. In the bubble.
And they were the two guys, their stories have been about, oh, are they a four or a five? And do they want to play four or five? And their agent wants, or and the team wants them to. And so now here it's like, nope, you're both just like doing four or five stuff together. I thought was pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it's like a pair of 4.5s, right? And which they're both their athleticism, their quickness, their size and length allows them to do both, which is what has made them, you know, all NBA players and all defensive team players throughout. There was a moment in the, I think it was the third quarter, where ball gets tipped back out to the perimeter and Ant gets a hand on it, like knocks it loose. And I forget who was back for Canada, but the guy is backtracking and four Team USA players, you freeze frame it, like they are at midcourt. And it's AD like one touches the pass to Halliburton, and it's Halliburton with the ball, AD, Anthony Edwards, and Jason Tatum all running straight at the rim. And Halliburton puts the lob up, and like all three of them, it looked like the dunkers that come out during timeouts and jump off trampolines. And it's like,
yes,
I'm going to pass it back and then I'm going to leave it back to you. Like they could have done that. They could have highlight passed it back and forth to one another. And that was one of those moments where like you freeze frame that and you see those four guys running towards the basket on offense. And you're like, that is the thing that will make Team USA the favorite as much as anything else. Like no other team in the world has that level of wing talent to throw at anybody, let alone, I mean, again, that's the second unit for this team. Mm-hmm. Team USA went 10 deep last night without Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And like, so, you know, who is expected to be healthy enough to join them in Abu Dhabi is going to be on the plane, yada, yada, yada. So that's the encouraging thing. I think, did anything, you know, as you were watching last night, I'm wondering, did anything sort of stand out as like a concern or discouraging to you as you were watching that first run with them?
No, but what you just said definitely can help me transition into item two of our five out here with Kawhi dropping out of Team USA and Derek White being added and the subliminal messaging from Jaylen Brown kind of suggesting that he didn't get the call because he's not a Nike guy, which, look, if you are tapped in at all to the sneaker world, there has long been rumors, if you will, that, I mean, USAB is a Nike entity. And I mean, a lot of those guys have always been Nike guys, but this is such a deep team. There's not going to be so many minutes to go around. Number one being that there's eight less minutes per game in FIBA.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think Jaylen Brown would have been as comfortable being the 12th man who is a Swiss Army knife. Like, oh, we just like can throw you in this situation as Derek White would have been. Or will be, I presume, knowing him a bit from our conversation back pre-All-Star and talking to him throughout the playoff run. Like, he's the most normal guy that I've met in the NBA. And I think he will not have any hesitancy about being the 12th man on Team USA and the most loaded Olympic lineup potentially of all time, which is like, there's going to be, my concern is just that there could be someone, I thought it could have been Kawhi at a certain point based off of health and whatever. Like Brandon Ingram last year was not very good. And then everyone got sick and the bug that was going around kind of allowed some of the lineup imbalancing and minute issues to eradicate themselves because BI didn't play like the last three games and Cam Johnson was out. And like, you wonder if Kawhi's knee, for example, could have been a thing that like thinned the rotation and helped, because it is going to be a bit of a math problem from just minutes that are available, let alone like interpersonal balancing egos chemistry standpoint too.
I think some of that's baked in with a roster that is, you know, heavily tilted toward older players, right? You know, you've got LeBron James. We should probably mention that LeBron James and Stephen Curry were starting for Team USA. didn't bring their names up in that first bit. So kind of an important a feature. And I would imagine two of the like three, maybe four locked in stone starting spots are going to be LeBron and Steph.
I would Embiid, think Joel is locked in there too. They were
given the recruiting pitch to get him on. I would imagine he's starting. And KD, you'd figure when he's healthy, would be in the spot that Devin Booker had last night against Canada. But all that to say, you are heavily tilted toward older players, you know, veterans, the guys who have a lot of miles on their legs. So I think the idea of maybe shorter bursts makes a ton of sense. The statement that USA Basketball released on Kawhi just said, like, he's been ramping up for the Olympics over the past several weeks, had a few strong practices in Vegas. He felt ready to compete. However, he respects that USA Basketball and the Clippers determined it's in his best interest to spend the rest of the summer preparing for the upcoming season rather than participating in the Olympic Games in Paris. So, you know, there was, you know, our old pal Mark Spears had reported after the initial news broke or after, that he was likely going to be out, that some people in Kawhi's camp were concerned about how his knee was responding. I mean, why wouldn't you be, given how things have worked? It's like just over 2 months since the Clippers season ended with him on the sideline yet again with right knee inflammation. He had said over the weekend that he was like only just able to get back on the court and work out like 2 weeks before training camp for the Olympic team started. Our guy Vinny Goodwill down there, as you mentioned in Vegas, said that the quote was that Kawhi said his knee was at a neutral state. Like, that doesn't seem particularly encouraging.
No.
So like, given that, given everything else, and given the, I mean, this Kawhi's sort of history with Team USA, where he was to decline, he had been part of the select team in 2012, I think, but then declined trips to go to the World Cup in 2014, the Olympics in 2016, wasn't part of it in 2021 in Tokyo.
Which, remember, a lot of people didn't want to do because of COVID and crazy travel with squeezing in two seasons and 8 months and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, you know, there was that wild thing of like, you had the Celtics guy, like Drew and Devin Booker, like, and Tatum going straight from the finals straight to Tokyo, right? So yeah, there are legitimate reasons why Kawhi hasn't suited up for Team USA, but it just kind of hasn't ever worked out. And then at this point, it's like, you feel for him because you wonder if this was like his maybe last opportunity to do it. But if the best the knee was going to get was neutral state, and there is, as we mentioned, this embarrassment of riches on the wing, you know, it kind of maybe makes sense for him to you know, you can understand why he skipped down on it. But I think that's the thing, like Grant Hill, I know, you know, who can speak better to what it's like to know what you want your body to do and not be able to accomplish it than Grant Hill, right?
For sure.
And he's
speaking,
you know,
speaking of body stuff and neutral, is neutral state what your muscle relaxers make you feel?
I mean, they make me feel a little bit better than neutral. I'm not going to lie about that. But also, I honestly, the first question I asked the doctor when he said, I'm going to prescribe these, was like, these aren't habit forming, are they? Cause I know myself a little, I know myself well enough to be like, wait a second, I can feel like this more often.
First it's the muscle relaxers, then it's the cigarettes, then who knows what's coming next for old Dan Devine.
I mean, no comment on any of that. This is the no comment room. But in any event, yeah. So, I mean, I think you're right to say that the shift to Derek White, who had been considered in the mix for like whatever was going to happen, if there was an alternate needed for, I think, months or at least a month, his name was in the mix there.
Yeah.
Like,
He seemed like the top choice to be the alternate. Another name I had heard in the ether as a potential alternate who would have been, I think, perfect too, is Aaron Gordon, who would be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we, like, when we initially, I mean, however long,
we many caped for him.
Episodes back ago in, you know, of the 200 in the Ball Don't Lie feed, that, like, you know, that was, I think, somebody that you were up on, you were into. I was like, I was into Kawhi. I was like, I want to see what he would look like if you gave him like 15 minutes a game to be a terror and see what happened. But, you know, we're not going to get that. And so I think the general idea of you're going to need to stay in front of some quick point guards, you're going to deal with some dangerous pick and roll players, and you want to be able to have as many shooters and floor spacers as possible. White makes a ton of sense there. And you know, this is, I think the goal would be you never have to really worry about it because the other 11 guys you're putting out there are blowing the doors off at whoever they're facing. But White seems like a pretty snug fit in the role that we've kind of envisioned for where he would be.
Yeah. What the role we're envisioning for Cooper Flagg in the NBA.
See, last week the segues were a little janky. This week they're smooth. I feel like you're finding your rhythm as we head into
the off-season waters. I was in my mom's office worried about porn pop-ups and all that type of stuff.
Yes, you were worried about that. And now I'm worried about it. Not on my computer, but on yours.
This is my company laptop. Cooper Flagg put on a show. And yeah. I forget the account. I'm pulling it up right now. I want to shout out. The account name is at @big_main100, who somehow put out the entire fourth quarter of the scrimmage between Team USA and the select team. And honestly, I'm looking at it now. I think it's gone. No, I still have it. Okay. If you want to watch the full fourth quarter, it's at @big_main100. Seems to be a gigantic Celtics fan. So I got to watch, thanks to that lovely sleuth, the full fourth quarter of that scrimmage. And it's cool. And I wasn't even in the building, right? But it's cool to me when you're watching something kind of pseudo happen in real time, especially in real time, like Zion's summer league debut that had a literal earthquake rupture through all of like the West Coast while he was erupting on dunks and whatever. It was a sick moment. And watching the Cooper Flagg tape just felt like watching something in real time that, like, in theory would come out on a documentary 20 years from now, like that famous Bobby Hurley and the select team took it to the dream team thing. And it's not going to get that same level of lore because Team USA won. And I think nowadays we get guys working out in the gym and Chet Holmgren crossing up Steph Curry and pro-ams like way more often than like in 1992 and not everyone has a computer with a beautiful camera in their pocket. So it's not going to get time capsuled as much. But as someone who watched Cooper Flagg twice in person in Las Vegas when there was a whole EYBL showcase during the in-season tournament in December, and he didn't look that impressive on offense at all. And everyone who has been watching was telling me, like, Montverde doesn't really use him that well. Like, he's not, he's more of like a traditional big screener mover guy. Like, he's not like the dude being able to have Drew Holiday in his pockets and create space and separation and then like pull up an 80s face was pretty sick. And there was others, just the cutting and the shooting looks, and the shooting has always kind of been like a question for him about, like, are you going to be like a Joel Embiid type 3-point shooter, or are you going to be a threat from there? Sure looked like it. It's going to be fun to watch him at Duke this year. And I think it will be hard, like, as someone who really does love the draft and like wrote a little book that highlighted a bunch of that stuff. And like, I get up for it every year. And it's just, I find it really challenging to envision someone supplanting him. Because if you recall, if people recall, RJ Barrett entered Duke as the number one prospect and Zion was not the guy. It was Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker before Embiid supplanted them. And Karl Anthony Towns was not the guy until a certain point. And that something dramatic, I think, would have to, the hype is so real for him. And he has risen to it at every chance he's gotten, aside from my two watchings of him in like super quiet, not a stage scene at all.
Sure.
Like the guys, the kids on the bench are like slamming their towels and chanting, and it just seems kind of cheesy because there's no one else in the space. But yeah, Cooper Flag seems to be like the truth. And it's cool too. The last thing I'll say, this is just me in off-season mode watching this on the couch, like getting caught up in some Game of Thrones and The Boys and finally watching TV again. There's something analogous to like a prospect and a prodigy to like the prince that was promised and like someone who like followers believe will. And I watched The Matrix for the first time ever this week. Like, the one is coming.
You had
like,
never seen The Matrix?
I had never seen The Matrix. I had never
How
seen
it. How does it hold up? You feel like it's really...
It holds up pretty good, aside from some of the fight scenes that, like, are obviously a video game and not acting.
Sure.
And some of the fighting is, like, a little too stupid. And it's, like... Also, as a devout Inception stan... It made me lose a little love for Inception because a lot of similarities and this came first and like they're all like they're in the like fake world and they're in the chair and there's someone back operating and hooking it up and all that type of stuff.
That's a good point.
So, but there was so much kung fu that I was more interested in the mind game, what is this world, world building, code stuff, than I was the kung fu. And the kung fu, some of it was a little so fabricated and silly. Like when they're just like jumping and hanging and it was a little bit...
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I think what you need to understand, and we'll get back to basketball talk in a minute, but this is important. What you think you need to understand is that stuff was like, that was the first time anybody had done that stuff.
That
bullet time, literally, you know, she Trinity leaps in the air and the camera sort of swings 360 degrees around her. All of that stuff was new.
Yes.
And
it's
all
like
of
when
those...
you go back and watch Friends, sometimes for old Friends episode seems pretty like trite and bad, but it's like, oh no, just every show since Friends copied this. So now it doesn't feel as good.
Or like grainy footage of Elgin Baylor Eurostepping in 1963. And you're like, well, it looks
it
faster than
basketball.
That now. Yeah.
Yeah. That's not, so Cooper Flagg is the one. He's the next one. And it's cool that at this juncture, it seems like he is living up to that.
I just think the fact that he's a 17-year-old kid who was out on the floor, not just like with pros, like you mentioned the pro-am stuff, but with the Olympic team.
Yes.
Like the A-level of... Yeah, and that it sounds like he not only belonged, but again, you know, referencing our buddy Mark Spears, he said he talked to a current NBA head coach that was there, which, you know, limits the pool, and said, like, that kid, like, Flag was the best player on the select team. He looked like the best player
on the
select team.
USA coaching staff.
Yeah, so you know, it narrows it down, right? But
there's other guys in the gym. They're a star-studded crowd around that, too. You had, like, a bunch of old... USA coaches, Jim Boeheim, Brad Stevens, I saw. So.
Yeah. But like that select team, and the select team is not like superstar studded, right? But the select team has guys that have been like top five, top 10 picks in recent drafts. It's Jalen Suggs is there. Amen Thompson's there. Jabari Smith Jr. is there.
Yeah,
Brandon Miller, Keegan,
Keegan
Murray, Jalen Durant, like guys that have been top picks in the recent past. And that the idea that Flag would look like maybe the best guy in that mix is pretty exciting. It's pretty fucking cool. And so, yeah, like I can't speak too much about his game. I actually thought like he looked bigger to me than 6'8". Like watching like the clips that were out there. I was like, oh, he looks like he's eye to eye with AD on some of these plays. But the idea that you got a kid who's 17 years old and not only holding his own, but like belonging in a real way in that situation, I think is pretty special. And certainly like, I think this past draft class, right, we suffered a little bit from it didn't feel like there was as much to be excited about because there wasn't as much storyline or narrative or familiarity with a lot of the prospects. I don't think that's going to be a problem with this dude. I think we're going to be paying pretty close attention to everything, every move he makes for the next calendar year until it's his turn walk across the stage. So that's pretty cool. And, I mean, shoot, somebody else drops out of the Olympic team. Maybe we got another call up coming. Maybe this year's Leitner hasn't even gotten a Duke yet.
Let's keep it moving quickly here for the last two of our five out. Number four, Sadiq Bey signs with the Wizards, 3-year, $20 million contract. Just an interesting thing because he is one of the Villanova Wildcats in the league, so he's not a Knick. No, I was just joking. It's an interesting thing to me because the Hawks traded 5 second-round picks to get him at the previous trade deadline, 2023. And then they were very far apart, according to my information, on early bird extension stuff last fall, which has kind of been a theme with Atlanta dating back to everyone not named Trae Young, John Collins, DeAndre Hunter. Like, it was then Sadiq. I, at this juncture, am of the impression that I would not expect Jalen Johnson to be signing his early bird extension this fall either. Super early. Like, those conversations probably won't pick up until the fall. But he's with Clutch. Clutch is going to ask for the max. And my understanding right now is Atlanta, as much as they believe in him, and he was like the one guy who was untouchable this year, don't think he's going to be a max dude either at this juncture right now. So it would be the latest in a long line. And like, I'm not saying Jalen Johnson's going anywhere at all. That's just
sure,
not.
Sure.
But for this, for them to have traded 5 seconds and then Sadiq walks out the door, he tore his ACL. That complicates things. And it's kind of anyone's guess. I mean, he's not going to be like a Lonzo Ball situation, but it's kind of anyone's guess about when he'll actually be back and playing. And
right.
If there's one team who won't really care about that, it is the Washington Wizards. But yeah, I think also it's an indication of like 3 years, 20. I don't know how much more he would have theoretically been able to have even gotten on this marketplace where the full mid-level went to one dude. And we will talk about this. We will write about it more. It's something I definitely want to ask people about when I get on the ground in Las Vegas for Summer League starting tomorrow. But this new CBA landscape absolutely, in my opinion, shrunk the middle class. And this is another example of it.
It's interesting because the point of comparison that I know was reported, and maybe your reporting indicated different things, but I know multiple people had brought up that what he was looking for initially was maybe something in the realm of what DeAndre Hunter got, which was like 4 and 90. And then obviously that didn't happen. You know, no extension, you know, happened. And then he goes through like a kind of up and down season where there was a couple of months where he was under, I think it was like basically half the season, like December through the All-Star break, like 39% from the floor and 29% from three. And like, if you're not producing a lot on a bad team and you're not really showing much else, it's kind of like, well, where is that kind of contract coming from? And then he gets hurt in March. And so that's going to like, you know, you're right. There's no reported timeline for his return. ACL tear could be up to a year, right? Like, guys, it takes a while for guys to come back. So that, like, not only, like, we won't know what Atlanta's interest level would have been had he stayed healthy, but with Jalen Johnson there, Hunter still on the contract, Risa Shea comes in as the number one pick. It's like another combo forward. Like, they pulled his restricted offer. They pulled his qualifying offer, right? Like, we'll just let you go to the market and see what the market will bear for you. And the market bore like half of the mid-level for a tanking team that is kind of almost like fine with him not playing. And so
the qualifying offer is a good point because I remember hearing before that Atlanta had given teams the impression that like, you can match his thing. Like you can give him an offer sheet. We're not going to match it. Potential. Like that was a thing.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think like one area, and this is, I'll admit that this is maybe just a blind spot for me. Like there are some players where I just sort of look like, is that guy, I can't tell if that guy's good. I've watched a bunch of them and I'm still not really sure if he's good. Like Sadiq Bey, like I've watched Sadiq Bey score 50 points in an NBA game and I'm not sure he's good. And, or at least, you know, somebody that you would want to invest in as a like central figure in your organization. I guess he'll get a couple of years to maybe make that case again in Washington, where, you know, if the corner three-pointer ticks back up, you know, his shooting took a real downturn this past season, you know, there's still a potential, like, that's a complimentary combo forward. You could, you know, who could carve out a career in the league. But this is like a, this, I think certainly not the way he and his team envisioned this going. And the hope is that he just gets healthy enough to prove that this was a real bargain deal for the Wizards as they try to build something moving forward.
Last item of five out, swinging it to the corner. We've got two extension things that I just wanted to provide an update on. The first, Jalen Brunson becomes eligible for an extension tomorrow, Friday, July 12th, that we discussed, we wrote about it when New York traded for Mikal Bridges. It would, in theory, I don't have the exact numbers, but Jalen Brunson signing this extension now would, in theory, dock himself like $100 million. And it would also significantly help New York evade apron penalties and keep building this thing and try to build a real contender at Madison Square Garden. If he does sign that, to me, you have to look at it as the six first round picks you traded for Mikal Bridges is, and you have to look at that price in a similar vein as the Clippers trading everything they could to get Paul George, because that also meant Kawhi was coming.
Right.
Didn't work out so hard for the Clippers, obviously.
No, no, it didn't.
But to me,
the exact number, by the way, if he waits till 2025, it's a projected $269.1 million over 5 years. And the difference there would be a $113 million gap in guaranteed money. So it's a gigantic difference.
Yes, which and he should be able to make up on the back end at the end of that contract.
However, Fred Katz at The Athletic had a good piece on some of the how that could work with an opt out and the 35% max for a 10-year veteran, et cetera.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, I think there's a real chance this dude takes that quote unquote pay cut, because all he wants to do is win. That's been the narrative around him, and it's been real throughout his entire, back to Villanova and high school and whatever. So I think that's a very real possibility. And I do wonder if in this Kawhi, Paul George, the Clippers were definitely not lowballing, but going below his max and all of his negotiations. He then goes to get to max in Philly. LeBron talking about flirting with taking a pay cut. Like, I do wonder if this apron stuff is going to potentially put us in a world where players start taking pay cuts again, a la the Heatles back in 2012 or 2011. And even Brady and Peyton Manning taking less in a cross sport. I just do wonder if that will happen at a certain point, especially being that these salaries are going to be going. What's the difference in $70 and $50 million? I don't know, because I'm not up there, but
$20 million.
But in terms of actuality.
No, I know. But I think it's easy for us to say that. And I think that if you are in the position where you actually have the opportunity to sign the deal that's larger,
would you pay $20 million for a ring? Probably.
Yeah.
I think a lot of guys probably would.
I think it's an interesting point.
If you're already getting 50.
I think it's an interesting point. I think it wouldn't be. I wouldn't presume to tell somebody how to make that decision, especially when this is your opportunity to, generate generational wealth to a degree that few people in the world have the opportunity to do. So I wouldn't presume to tell anybody that.
I'm not telling them not to. I'm just saying, no, I'm wondering if it will happen.
Yeah. I think that I'm interested. I feel like the rising salaries in a new environment where I think the reports were that the $76 billion broadcast deal is basically done now, and dotting T's and crossing I's and maybe seeing if TNT can be involved in it in some way. But that is going to hit the system next year, I believe. And so you're going to start seeing
25-26.
It's for 25-26. So you're going to start seeing the maximum 10% year over year raises in the salary cap, which is going to kick in for, that'll elevate the average salary. It'll elevate the max salary slots and the 30% and the 35%, all that. So maybe what that means is if you are choosing between 70 and 50, but that 50 would allow you to create more flexibility, maybe that makes it easier. Maybe the overall increase in cap space in the cap leads to a loosening of some of the restrictions in terms of there's now just more room before you hit the aprons. There's more room before you're in the tax structure. So maybe that then leaves a little bit more flexibility for teams. And if I'm a player and I'm looking at it and saying well, the team now has more room to get before we get to the apron and all the penalties. Maybe I will take as much as I can possibly get rather than having than being sold on this is going to be good for everybody. So always these there are downstream effects and unintended consequences of these things. If Jalen Brunson takes that deal, I mean, that would be a very interesting decision that I imagine a lot of people would have opinions and positions on, given the tightly knit family structure in which he is operating in New York. And
says the guy wearing a Knicks t-shirt.
Well, it's a Knicks Ramones t-shirt. I don't know if you could see there. It's like the old Ramones logo with the Ewing Oakley Mason. Our friends at NBA Offseason, literally 15 years ago, maybe. I don't know. I keep shirts around for a while. Anyway, that Brunson situation is fascinating. I think one of the more fascinating players that people has been, a name has been on a lot of lips since the DeRozan deal got done is Lauri Markkanen. So where are we at on his discussion, Jake?
Yeah, this is the last nugget for our five out. His extension, renegotiation and extension that he's eligible for on August 6th, like that is going to happen. That dude is going to get paid, whether it's in Utah or elsewhere. I think it's going to be in Utah, like we've been saying. I mean, the guy's as attractive right now as a trade trip as he is, in large part due to the fact that he's only on an $18 million contract at this juncture. But that is also why the man, after, you know, moving around so much. And I mean, I wrote about this at Bleacher Report, I guess it was 22, right? Summer 22. He was like basically held hostage by Chicago in his RFA. Like, I remember that was like the story of Summer League at a certain point, and like the whispers of Summer League, because Chicago wanted a first round pick for Lauri Markkanen, but also were telling teams we're not taking back future salary, similar to what happened with DeMar just now in San Antonio. But
sounds like the Bulls. Yeah, the tracks. But
in order to have someone meet the $18 million that Chicago wanted, or that Lauri Markkanen, they had to then send another first round pick out the door. It basically was costing you two first round picks to get Lauri at that time, which Cleveland figured out with Larry Nance and Portland and blah, blah, blah. However, like, it's time for this all-star who's 27 to get paid. And Utah need, like, they have a month to continue to explore this trade stuff. His representation has been in town in Salt Lake City during the Salt Lake Summer League. So there's conversations that are happening behind the scenes. That's all I can and will say. But it's also like a thing where the Jazz, I mean, Sacramento's out. Like, I do think they were very close, like we talked about on this last episode, but now they got DeMar. And even if there's still a way to Kevin Herter's salary and picks and whatever, even if there's still an offer that gets cobbled, that could get cobbled up, the fit seems so wonky with all those names there. Plus, like, is that really a situation that, like, if, like, right now at this juncture, Lauri Markkanen is on an expiring contract. Like, if you're a team trading for him, you probably want to know, just like Pascal Siakam to Indiana and OG leaving and other situations before them. Like, you kind of want to know that what the guy wants and how he feels about your situation long term before you're going to invest all that capital to go get him. So all that being said, like, Utah, I think, can't afford to lose him if they don't find a deal that meets that high asking price between now and August 6th. So come August 6th, I would be shocked if he doesn't get that offer from Utah right away. And I think also there is, Mark Stein put out a great nugget that I didn't know, didn't really check at all, that, like, of course, you know, if renegotiate, you can't get traded for the next 6 months, but 6 months to the day of August 6th is February 6th, which is the 2025 trade deadline. So in theory, he would only be trade eligible for the day of the trade deadline. And if he wanted to, after being moved around and being in all these trade talks, if Lauri wants to, he could intentionally not do it until after that to just make himself, like, forget about what could happen. Like, I just think there's a possibility that they actively choose to do that to make him untradeable, to keep his young growing family, like Jeremy Grant in Portland. I think there's been talk about that, like not really wanting out or asking out depending on interest elsewhere, because like dude's a young dad, they put some roots down. It's not the easiest thing to just uproot your family. Like Paul George was talking about that on his show. He's going to have to bring all of his family across the country because he just decided to play basketball somewhere else, which is what he does for a living. So it makes sense. But that's the stuff I think a lot of fans don't necessarily consider too, about the people behind the jersey. And it'll be interesting to see exactly when that renegotiated extension deal comes through and what all that means moving forward. But I do think he will be getting that money, and it is in every interest in Utah to do that and have him not be able to just go and test free agency. And I'm either going to let you answer or respond to what I just said, because we got to take a break, and we're going to come back more after some ads with some new stuff on the Miami Heat. Thank you very much. Come back to No Cap Room. Welcome back to No Cap Room here on the Ball Don't Lie podcast. And here we are going to vibe check the Miami Heat. A lot of changes at the top of the Eastern Conference. New York got McHale like we talked about. Philly gets Paul George like we talked about. A lot of indecision, inactivity from the Milwaukee Bucks and the Miami Heat, which has a lot of the Heat fans in my life a little bit up in arms, a little bit not vibing like Dan Devine is vibing right now about this team's, that again was the 8 seed each of the last two playoffs, of course made the finals 1 year, but just a quick ouster at the hands of the Boston Celtics, the hated enemy Boston Celtics, in the first round of this year's postseason. And they arguably got worse in losing Caleb Martin to the Philadelphia 76ers, which I think losing him in general is a stinger, but losing him to the Philadelphia 76ers that knocked you out in the play-in tournament and are only going to be better and are one of the giants of this conference that you're going to have to get through, that sucks. It's tough. So let's start there with Caleb, because he ends up signing with Philly on a 4-year, $32 million deal, which there's been a ton of reporting from all the Miami reporters that the Heat kind of offered a 565 type thing instead, which would have required him to opt into the $7.1 million player option he had this year, and then he could have had a 4-year 58 after that. That's kind of the loose understanding of it that I have. And I believe, I've been told, that Martin and his side of things thought, well, we came within a whisper of being the Eastern Conference Finals MVP a year ago. We were the best player on our team in game two win at Boston this year. And someone was going to get a bag from Detroit. And in theory, someone was going to get a bag from Utah as well. Utah hasn't. Detroit gave it to Tobias Harris. Mm-hmm. But I think the Detroit thing, I think Caleb Martin was in the mix for that type of agreement, let's say. So I think that there was belief on his side they could have gotten up to 18, up to maybe $20 million. So that 458 sounds nice at first, but if you fully believe you're worth 20 and your team is telling you, actually, you're only worth this, I could understand why there could be some fraught feelings and some want to go elsewhere, and maybe even some want to like stick it to Miami and go to a place that would hurt them more for maybe even a little less. But I'd be curious to know where he stood on, I haven't checked this, I'd be curious to know where he stood on the mid-level wish list in Golden State. It only went for the only full mid-level that we talked about earlier to D'Anthony Melton also only went for 1 year.
That's right.
So would the 4 year and like now he gets, if I remember correctly, the fourth year on this 432 with Philly as a player option, so he can get back out into the market earlier than he would have on the four-year thing in Miami. So there's things to understand, I think, both sides of this. But the brass tacks of it all is, I think Miami got worse. I think Philly got better. And there does seem to be a general sense coming from Heatland that, like, this team hasn't been healthy for a long time. And you just need to get Jimmy back, and Terry Rozier, they seem to really, really value by giving that first round pick for him. And Tyler Hero has been, you know, off and on the injury report. So maybe this group, you know, they bring Hayward Highsmith back on a 2-year, $11 million deal. Like, maybe there is culture, and Spoelstra and Jaime Jaquez takes a further step forward, and Nikola Jovic takes a further step forward. But all that being said, Dan, what do you feel? What are the vibes you're picking up on Miami right now, and how they could really actually factor into the top threshold of the Eastern Conference that seems to be reserved right now for what's going up and down the top Northeast corridor of I-95?
Yeah, the vibe appears to be we're letting this thing peter out. You know, you go back to the 2022-23 playoffs, you know, they you mentioned they're the eighth seed, they make that run, they get to the finals. Here's the top six players in terms of minutes played. There are six guys that played more than 500 minutes for the Heat in that postseason. Jimmy Butler, still there. For how long, we'll see. Bam Adebayo, we know he's the standard bearer. They just max extension for him. Caleb Martin, gone. Gabe Vincent, gone. Max Strus, gone. Kyle Lowry, gone. And some of that is, you know, they got richer deals elsewhere.
Udonis Haslam, gone.
Udonis Haslam, you know, spiritually played 700 minutes for that team in the playoffs. But some of it is just they made whatever competitive offers they could make, and then the guy took more money someplace else. There wasn't going to be the opportunity to make as much there as he could have somewhere else. You know, those sorts of things happen. Lowry winds up getting moved in a deal that, you know, that allows him to get bought out and go to Philly last trade deadline. But the much of the core of the team that made that run is now gone. Who's left is Jimmy Butler, and Jimmy Butler is not going to get an extension right now. It seems pretty likely. You know, Pat Riley said very publicly at his end of season press conference that they wouldn't be extending Jimmy, or rather that we hadn't discussed that internally right now. The quote was, we have to look at making that kind of commitment, and when do we do it? We don't have to do it until 2025, but we'll see. And then the kind of like continues on the later part. The big one is, that's a big decision on our part to commit those kind of resources unless you have somebody who's going to be there and available every single night. That's the truth. Here is where we note that Jimmy Butler in 5 years as a member of the Heat has not played 65 games and has missed an average of 20 games a year since he got to South Beach. So when Jimmy Butler's there, he's awesome. When Jimmy Butler gets to the playoffs, he's a top 10 player in the league. Jimmy Butler generally seems to be like, well, the regular season is something we can kind of, we'll work our way through and we'll see where we stand in April and then turn it on. And in a conference that is getting better all across the board, and especially at the top, that's not good enough. And for the vibe in Miami for the most part, the last few seasons has been like, we have to hope we can drag you into the mud and choke you out because we can't score. And so what's the central figure hanging over a lot of this? Our offense isn't as good as we want it to be. Financially, we are strapped to a degree where we kind of can't keep these guys around and we can't figure out how to replace them. And our best lineups don't always seem to fit together all that well. It's Tyler Hero is kind of the central figure in that discussion because, you know, Brian Windhorst talks about it. A number of people around the league talk about it. Your third salary right now needs to be somebody who's either playing like a superstar or can get you a superstar, can get you quality play in return. Yes. And it feels like the market for the last year and a half has spoken on Tyler Hero, where no place else seems to value him at that same level, or at least be willing to pay him what he makes for the production he provides and give up what it would take to get him to do it there.
But we'll always have game two in Boston.
When he looked awesome. And like there are discrete skills and there are specific levels where it's like the way that guy plays pick and roll translates to a playoff series. The way that guy can facilitate off the bounce is really important for a good offense. He can be an on-ball or off-ball shooter. You can find way, you know, he's rebounds really well for a guard his size, you know, yada, yada, yada. But building with him has not worked yet. And some of that is, as you mentioned, he keeps missing time too. Like he missed half of last season. And so when we get to the part where it's like, yeah, Miami's best lineups just didn't get a whole lot of time together because Jimmy was out and Hero was out. Terry Rozier, who came over at the trade deadline and then got injured. You know, there was like a 20-game sample where he was pretty good there, but then he got hurt and he wasn't available in the playoffs. Maybe it's hard to build around all these guys that don't necessarily play all the time, but that's kind of what you signed up for when you gave Jimmy the extension you gave him, when you gave Hero the extension you gave him, and you've, you know, mortgaged the pieces that you have. This is the roster you're left with. And it's a roster that's probably going to be like a bottom 10 offense again, unless somebody pops. And I'm not sure who you maybe see doing that.
Yeah. Let's see who's going to pop off in Summer League in Las Vegas. We don't have a superstar rookie like Victor Wembanyama or the Zion Williamson earthquake of 2019 that we alluded to earlier. But I think that's going to actually be good. I think there's going to be more buzz around all these games because no one's seen Zachary Risichet play of like local media.
I mean, sure.
Few NBA personnel, I think, actually had the opportunity to go. Like in terms of like the entire league is in the gym. How many people and all these front offices and coaching staffs have actually seen that guy play in France? Not that many. Same thing with Alex Saar over in Australia. And go down the list. I think it'll be like no one knew who TJ and Sal Juan was until like a month before the draft. So there'll be plenty of opportunity.
Still don't know who he is, but that's neither here nor there.
He's the guy that Charlotte didn't want to trade below number 8 to San Antonio for because they were worried San Antonio would take him. He was their guy. He was the Hornets guy. Yeah. So let's just quickly. We're each going to pick a rookie and we're each going to pick a second year guy who could quote unquote make the leap that we are looking forward to watching. Dan, I will defer to you.
Well, now I'm looking through the rosters. I'm wishing that Nikola Jovic was going to be on the Heat Summer League team because I could use some of the Jovic stats that I didn't get to in the previous segment, but that's all right. I'm going to, and it was a pure coincidence. I picked this year because it was the
Well, Jovic will be playing in the Olympics. You can check him out there.
There you go. The Heat outscored opponents by 11.1 points per 100 when Jovic played with Jimmy and Bam. All right. Coincidence that I picked the Knicks shirt because it was the first one in the line in the drawer in the dresser. Rokas Jokubaitis. Let's go with him. Lithuanian point guard.
Lithuania's finest.
He was the 34th pick, I believe, in the 2021 NBA draft. The Knicks took him a couple of spots after Deuce McBride. But he has, Rokas has stayed in Europe. He's been playing for Barcelona since 2021, won the EuroLeague Rising Star Award in 2022. Lefty point guard, has shot over 40% from three across six pro seasons in Europe. And Lithuania didn't qualify for the Olympics, unfortunately for them. So, but the fortunate part for New York is that that means that Jokubaitis is available this summer and free to come over to Summer
and
League
wants
and get
to
a,
come over.
And wants to come over. Yeah. So, the opportunity is there for him for the Knicks to get a longer look at him. He played, I think, like maybe 30 minutes across three games in Summer League 3 years ago. But different player now. He's been playing at the ACB level and the EuroLeague level. They get a look at him and get a chance to see, like, obviously the Knicks now are a lot different than the Knicks 3 years ago. So it's not like he's going to walk into a major role on this team, but I think it's like the Knicks are in a position, especially after signing OG, after making all putting all the assets in the middle for the Bridges trade, with, as you mentioned, the Brunson extension up in the air. The idea of if you can find a quality, you know, ball handler, shooter, point guard, somebody that can fit at the NBA level, that could be really useful as either a super low cost contributor in the years to come, or as a sweetener, as a trade chip, somebody that you hold the rights to this player who has looked good here, has looked good in Europe. Maybe that helps sweeten a deal or make, you know, grease the skids on a transaction down the road. So what he looks like at the NBA level, I think is something to keep an eye on.
Or is he just someone who helps the point guard depth where, you know, Alec Burks is gone. He's to Miami.
That's right.
Didn't mention him in the vibe check. Bojan Bogdanovic was supposed to help a lot in second unit ball handling stuff. He was obviously the salary out the door for Mikal Bridges. And sure, like Mikal can handle it in spots and Randall can handle it in spots and what have you. But I definitely, just like New York center depth, I had definitely been hearing throughout the summer that they are looking to potentially like have one more guy behind McBride who they could potentially break glass in case of emergency and use on the ball. So if it could be him, that'd be interesting. I mean, he was great in Lithuania's win against Team USA in the World Cup. So Zach Edey was not great in Canada's win against USA in the World Cup. He didn't play. So it wasn't, he wasn't bad.
Well, there you go. That explains that.
He was awesome in his opener in the Salt Lake Summer League against the Jazz, where never seen this ever in my life, where the missed free throw at the buzzer leads to a direct tip in because his hand is already at the rim anyway.
And by the way, maybe that missed free throw, maybe we've unlocked Jake LaRavia's superpower. Maybe this is what, you know, like in the way that, you know, coaches will have like certain guys they want to make sure are in the game to inbound. And maybe like Jake LaRavia is who you get off the bench when you need the intentional missed free throw.
That's his version of Peyton Pritchard's half court heave.
That's right. Yes, exactly.
No, I'm just, I'm so interested to see Zach Edey live at this level because he is the most polarizing member of this draft class to the point where our colleague Kristen Peek not only went on our live show to say that he was the worst draft pick in NBA history, but doubled down when I kind of poked her on Twitter on Monday night about his strong debut, saying that she doesn't still think he's NBA talent. I just, look, Memphis wanted a center. They wanted Donovan Clingan. They were trying to trade up for Donovan Clingan. But after talking to Houston, Detroit, and Charlotte, three teams that Memphis was definitely in conversation with about trading up to draft Donovan Clingan, none of those teams really indicated to me that they believed Memphis was making such an aggressive push up the board to try to go get him. And while they did, they absolutely did try. Seems like they were really content on just taking Edey at nine if Clingan wasn't there and they couldn't have traded up because they believed in him that much, because he's 7'5" and is going to be a massive screen for Ja Morant to do anything off of.
Massive.
And that is what I'm most curious to. We've talked about my interest in Memphis for next season. I am looking forward to watching him and seeing how that, like his high screen action stuff can project out to Ja speed demoning his way around him. Can it be like a Talladega Nights slingshot type Cal Naughton Jr. Ricky Bobby thing? Can it be anything that is justifying Zach Edey from being the number 9 pick in this draft? Where I mean, there was enough people believing that Utah was considering him at 10. There were people considering Miami liked him a lot at 15 and wherever. So like, it seemed pretty solid he was going to be lottery-ish no matter what. But there are plenty of people out there like KP who don't think this guy is going to be anything more than Taco Fall. So those are two dramatic ends of the spectrum. That's why I said polarizing, because few things that people label as polarizing actually are. I think there are people who think this guy's going to be a bona fide starter, and there are people who think this guy shouldn't even be in the league. And it's going to be somewhere in between. Maybe he is a starting caliber center that's just good, and it is not really in between, and it's one side and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I'm just fascinated to see him in person at this stage. And I'm also curious about seeing Anthony Black play. He's my second year guy that I'm picking, because didn't really get a chance in Orlando last year, of course. And there's been all this buzz from Chris Paul to Tyus Jones to whoever, that Orlando like wants a point guard. And I've just never really bought it. I mean, if they wanted Tyus Jones, I could have gotten him this summer. Maybe they still will. They still have some room to play with. Who's to say? But think if he was like at the top of their wish list, that would have already happened. And there's definitely some thought. I think, you know, KCP is a big signing, but everything else really, they just re-upped their guys. And I think there's a belief in Orlando that both Anthony Black and Jet Howard, and then Caleb Houston, and to some degree too, can have some internal development that will help Orlando continue to climb up the ladder and not necessarily need to go satisfy this outside noise about they need a point guard, in large part also because they really like the ball being in Paolo and Franz's hands.
Sure.
But Anthony Black, in theory, is this rangy wing who can do kind of all that stuff. He can kind of be like a bigger version of Drew Holiday, Derek White. That's kind of what I think Orlando is envisioning for him. That's a high bar, though.
Of course.
I'm wondering if being the second year dude, how some of these dudes do fucking pop off. Can he show a glimpse of that at Thomas and Mack Center? That is what I'm looking forward to seeing.
It's interesting because that feels a little bit like it's not his game, right? Like his game is not necessarily to dominate the ball and put up the kind of performance where you're like, oh, well, you know, we've seen enough. Like that guy has clearly been working on his game to the point where you could put him in a real game right now and feel like pretty good that he'd give you 20 or something like that. He's much more the like, or at least looked that way at the in his rookie season. Like, I'm a connect the dots player. Like, get the ball to me. I'll make the right read in the extra feed, and I can guard across positions. But like, I'm the kind of guy who lifts the floor, but like isn't necessarily flashy when he mm-hmm. does it. It will be interesting to see if that's if that's something that he is given the edict to go do. Like, yeah, look for your shot, hunt some opportunities to make plays. Let's see you expand your game a little bit. Also, just in along those lines, the thing with Edie, I wonder is like summer league can be tough for bigs because it's a lot of point guards, like guys who you have never played with before, who you might not play with anymore, like. The guards have the ball in their hand a lot. They're also looking to grab eyeballs, grab attention, show what they can do. And like feeding the bigs is sometimes not always high on the list of priorities there. So I guess it also helps though to be the guy who's 7'2" and can go grab 7'4" or whatever he is and just go grab the ball off the rim, which is kind of part of Memphis's calculus too. I'm interested in one of those guys that is going to have the ball in his hand a lot, I think. Brandon Miller in Charlotte. I know it's not exactly a hot take to say that the guy who was the number two pick in the draft is somebody worth keeping an eye on, but Charlotte, obviously.
He was damn good last year.
And when they leaned on him more later, when the shift happened toward, we're moving on from Terry Rozier, we're moving on from Gordon Hayward, we're tearing down somewhat here to set ourselves up with more draft capital for the future. His time of possession went up, his touches went up, his usage went up, and he averaged like 18 or 19 points a game. Not great efficiency, but handful of rebounds, two or three assists. Like he shouldered that responsibility well, and then that led into select team work this summer. What you're looking for here for Brandon Miller, I think, is the kind of one game, two game performance, maybe, where he blows you out of the water and announces like no more needs to be seen of you this summer. Like you proved in those first couple of games, what you've been working on, the level you are prepared to reach, that a leap is possible here. Like Keegan Murray had that to some degree last year in the California Classic, where it's like, I think scored like 70 points in two games. And they were like, all right, shutting you down, all done. Yeah. We feel comfortable about where you're at. I think you want to see that from Brandon Miller in Charlotte. And then you go into the summer where you're like, or go into the season where you're like, we feel pretty good about him being that central piece. LaMelo Ball comes back, easy for me to say, and we're building out this young roster, but like that feels, we feel even more confident in him as a tentpole player. I think that's kind of what I'm looking to see from Brandon Miller. Like show me that you did all that stuff at the end of last season without LaMelo Ball, show that you should still be the number one guy, maybe when LaMelo Ball's back. I think that'll be interesting to watch.
We will be back next week Thank you for listening to everything we spieled through today. Thanks to John Gennaro, who does all the things to look, I mean, he does look good, but to make the show look and sound great. Please subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you are currently listening on and leave us a 5-star review. That would be great. We thank you for listening and we'd appreciate it if you came back again next week for a Summer League Dispatch episode of No Cap Green.